Hi, you're listening to the Design Again podcast, and I'm your host, Pietro Polsinelli. In this episode, we are with Daniel Benmergui, who is an independent video game maker, whom many of us are following on his progress on Storyteller, which I found defined as Storyteller is a puzzle game where you build visual stories by placing characters and props into a comic-like sequence of frames. And listeners will find links to Daniel's works in the podcast notes. Hi, Daniel.
Hey, how are you doing, man? Doing great.
So can you tell us something about yourself and how did you get into games?
Well, I actually started being an employee for a big company called Gameloft that makes mobile games for a few years. And then I decided that what I actually wanted to do was make games themselves. And working for big companies means that you learn to be an employee more than actually making games. So you train yourself to be an employee, not to make games themselves. And I didn't want that. That's not what I wanted to learn. So I decided to quit and become an independent developer on 2008.
Okay.
Which is the first year, that year I made my first game, independent game actually, that did pretty well in terms of reception, so I was happy, yeah. I'd have to say I'm leading a happy independent life.
Okay. And now, even from your very first works, we see influences of some structural studies and combinatorics of stories, and like come to mind like props, morphology of the folk tales, or and even, I mean, less academic anthropological studies like Scott McCloud, Understanding Comics. I mean, are these yes. Influences in your works? And I mean, how did they come? How did you combine your making games and this kind of studies?
So it's kind of a coincidence. Storyteller, the idea for my game, showed up a long time ago. And I never researched anything. When I first came up with the idea, it was just an idea. I want to make an interactive story about moving stuff around, you know, moving objects within a story. What happens if I can choose who's going to be a hero, who's going to be a villain, and what happens then, what's the ending. I wanted to make a very simple experiment on that. At that point, I never researched anything about interactive stories or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But then, when I wanted to make a full game out of it, a bigger game, there were some problems that I could not figure out how to solve, and I tried making the games. I tried several times to make Storyteller as years went by.
Okay.
The first attempt was in 2008. Then I tried again in 2009, and then I tried again in 2010, and I failed both times because I had a missing link.
I mean, how did you realize? How did you realize that you were failing? I mean, just by personal trying or by showing it to beta testers or?
Well, it was mostly because I made different prototypes each year. Trying different approaches to the problem of how to make this game work, and I could tell myself as I was making the prototype, I realized this is not going to work. This won't work.
Okay.
I never got into the point of play testing them because I knew they had no future.
So the game design
it only happened in 2011.
The game it was the game mechanics didn't convince you.
Yeah. It was a structure. It was a problem of structure. When you're trying to make a game about dynamic stories, you have like two different approaches, grossly stated. One is to handmade all the possibilities, right? And so you know how many stories you can make, which is just a combination, the restricted combination of pre-made stuff that you did. And then the other approach is having an algorithmic production for stories, which has a problem of usually not making very good stories.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to have a game that has a bit of both. Okay. So I could have enough control to make the stories interesting and make it algorithmic enough so I don't have to author everything that could happen in the game.
Okay.
One of the biggest problems with doing that is that is the combination of options, or the combination of situations. When you try to have dynamic stories that have a lot of potential for making different stories,
mm-hmm.
there are many elements that combine to each other, and all the combinations can be like hundreds, right? There's hundreds of ways you can combine things. Games usually have the problem of having to implement animations or old text or sound effects or whatever it is to represent a story, a situation in a story, right? So if this character kills this other character, you need to have an animation for this character killing this other character and the other character dying, mm-hmm. and you need to add those things. Those make the combinations, all the combinatorial combinations, very expensive.
Yeah, you quickly have an explosion of combinatorics. I mean,
yeah, you have an explosion of combinatorics, and each combination has a relatively high cost.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to go there. Nobody wants to go there. That's why the mainstream industry didn't tackle the problem of dynamic stories head on, mostly because it's too expensive. So I wanted to make the game in a way that it was not expensive to cover the combinations.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried several things, and I realized before 2011, when I started reading Scott McCloud talked about, in his book, Understanding Comics, he talked about that our mind is good at looking, two different frames in a comic, for example. Our mind is good at looking two different frames and connecting them, making them make sense. You know, create mm-hmm. narrative out of that. You've got this character is alive on A and the character is dead on B. Then you assume that between A and B something happened that killed him.
So you don't have to do too much.
Our mind is good at doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as a reader, you have to do a lot, right?
Yeah,
your mind has to work a lot to.
No, I meant as a writer.
But, so what I realized then was that what I could do is hide, all the animations of characters killing other characters and stuff. I could hide those in between the frames.
Mm-hmm.
So in Storyteller, you don't see action almost never. You don't see the action. You see the consequences. That's how you play Storyteller. So if you want to have a character being killed, you having live on the first frame and dead on the second frame, and you create you have, of course, to create a situation in which somebody wants to kill him. But once that happens, you only need to have the character alive, present in one frame, and dead in the second frame, and you have murder now. The game reads that there is murder there.
Mm-mm-mm.
But I don't need to implement an animation of how this character is stabbing or shooting the other guy or anything like that. I don't need to do that. So by hiding all the action in between the frames, I don't need to implement hundreds of animation frames and stuff. That gave me one of the... that was one of the biggest problems I was having with the old version of Storyteller.
Okay.
That was solved in 2011.
Okay.
When I tried again in 2011, I realized that this is going to work. I can make a game out of this now.
You know what? You made me think of telenovelas, like soap operas, mm-hmm. where often they use the same techniques. You always see the end emotional consequences of actions that are not shown but told. Mm-hmm. And...
American movies do that when there's a murder,
mm-hmm.
a gruesome death, or sex.
yes.
You only see the consequences. You don't see the action, right? Because moral values don't allow them to show them on TV or something. Yeah.
Okay.
So in soap operas in America, you don't see that kind of things. There's no sex scenes.
Mm-hmm.
No explicit ones at least. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
so they are using that to circumvent moral issues.
And you are using instead for simplifying the development also. But actually, I must say, as a user of the prototypes you've seen, you, as a player, you, this is not at all a problem. You enjoy seeing the consequences there. I mean, you enjoy the situations. It's working, I guess, at least for what I can see. The thing you said up to now, you would make us think about all the discussions and the problems about the branching narratives, which is in video game design has been so much debated, and in fact, contrary to what many literary-minded people, when they approach the field, then you realize that games are not a specific media because of interactivity or branching narratives, and in fact, most games don't have branching narratives. But this has been taken as almost a rule, and what you're experimenting is, in fact, instead trying to use this game possible game mechanics of having actually branching narratives. So what you were saying is that you're sort of trying to find a feasible way of doing this.
Yes. What I wanted is that, what I've seen from other people trying to make interactive stories, like Chris Crawford, there's this thing I call the Chris Crawford pit, which is when you are trying to make the simulation so complicated that... First of all, as a developer, it seems that like there is no end. It's far too big for you to make a sensible game out of all the things that your engine can do. And there's also the problem that when the simulation of the engine is complicated, sophisticated, as human beings, we're not very good at interacting with it. So the thing with interactive stories is that we are used to stories being delivered either by a narrator or by, you know, just watching it, like on cinema or something, or looking at it, comments and stuff. So, but we are always used to a human being producing those stories. And it's a very hard problem, AI problem, to make a computer do that. I don't think that's going to be possible in a long time. So what I wanted to do, contrary to what what I was saying was that as players, when you're playing a game with a complicated story creating simulator, something feels off because it's not a human producing them. Mm-hmm. So your brain starts trying to figure out how the simulator works so you can manipulate it into creating the stories or the outcome that you needed to produce, right? But then, since the simulator is so complicated, you cannot predict it. You can't predict how it works. So it's not sophisticated enough to pose as a human being that they can interact with you. But it is sophisticated enough that it's too complicated for you to understand it. That's a very big problem, I think, from other interactive story approach. So what I tried to do was, first of all, make it a very simple simulator in storyteller. There are no hidden numbers or complicated algorithms doing stuff behind the scenes that you don't know or anything like that. Storyteller is made of very simple logical rules, like if this character is available and this character is confronted with somebody that he would like with these characteristics, he's going to fall in love. So you know that. You know that's going to happen, no matter, except you created a situation in which that doesn't happen. You can predict when you drop a character or a prop into Storyteller, you kind of know what's going to happen. You could predict what's going to happen. It's not totally random. And the amount of possibilities, the amount of combinations that there are in the game is very, very big. It's huge. But from a programming standpoint, I only picked a few things to work with. And so the explosion of combinations that I have to take into account when I'm programming the game is not that big. It's still big, and it's still very problematic for me to make the game not have bugs, which is one of the biggest challenges of making Storyteller, technically speaking. But the amount of combination is small enough that I know that if I just hammer away at it, I'm going to end up with a consistent bug-free simulator.
Okay.
That still has a lot of options, right? So it just, so you could say that that you know all the interactive all the dynamics stories teams like I don't know like Michael Matias or Chris Crawford, they jump into the ocean, they try jumping into the ocean of interactive stories. Whereas I just pick a small pool. It's like a kiddie pool. So I'm just splashing there and I want to make sure that I can, you know, I can make a small game with just this subset of all the things that, that interactive stories could do. And I want to make it a compelling game also. I mean, that's my main goal.
Yeah,
the fact
yeah.
that I'm using interactive stories is just a tool. It's just a tool.
Yeah, in fact, I want to link here because and also many people are very curious about one thing, because this fact of the stories is actually an environment where you're letting us solve puzzles, in fact. There's a puzzle component, and if you could say something about the engine that's behind that, I mean, the fact that... I've also seen in some of your latest posts that they're actually... Sometimes there are several ways to solve the situation, different ways of solving a situation. And how did you, I mean, how is this modeled in the engine, the fact I mean, that he discriminates between a good and bad solution? And
Okay, so I have an answer for that. So the story simulator, the ones that creates the reactions of the characters when you drop them onto the frames and the captions and all that, I mean, all the stuff that the engine does, is create status for the character. So this character is falling in love right now. So this other character, he's in love with this other character because he fell a few frames ago. So this character is angry at this other character because he stabbed his mother or something. Right, so the all the engine does is put status in each one of the elements in the story, in the characters and the props. This is your status right now. Mm-hmm. You are in love. You hate this character. You did. You just jailbreaked. You punished the criminal. Whatever. Mm-hmm. Right, so that's all the engine does. Then levels are kind of the levels in the games are kind of different things. What they do, I mean, they have code, but what each level does is look at the status and make sure that it's fulfilled. Like, if one of the levels says, somebody must have committed suicide out of heartbreak, all the level does is look at the status of each one of the characters and ask him, did you suicide out of heartbreak?
Mm.
If that's true, then level's fine, right?
Okay.
But what happens is that there's usually several ways of creating that status, that state of things, right? It happens many times that people find solutions that I never thought of.
So you don't care how they reach the state.
So there's no progression in a level. I mean, many people ask me to put a mechanism in the game that tells you if you're doing good, if you're getting close to the goal. But I can't. I really can't. I can. I cannot. Because I have no idea what you're doing. I don't know if you're making progress or not, because I don't know all the possible answers to every single level. I only know a few.
You don't want to eliminate that.
So there's no way for me to measure your progression within a level. Either you solve it or not. That's all I know.
Yeah. Okay. So this also is a way not to. I mean, this simplifies development a little bit.
Yes. Yeah. No. And if I wanted to measure or give feedback on progress within one level, that would be very difficult. it would make development a lot more painful. That's for sure.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm not going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And besides, I mean, something I really wanted out of this game is to, you know, as a developer, I control your experience, or I control the solutions to level up to a degree, right? If you're really clever, or you think really different from how I think, you might find answers that are actually easier to achieve than the ones I intended level for. And that's fine with me. I think part of the magic of the game is you figuring out ways to solve the levels that are easier than what the levels are trying to make you do, right?
Okay.
So part of the magic of the game is just that as a developer, I don't control the whole experience. After a certain line, there's going to be players that are way smarter than I am, and they're going to figure out solutions that I could never think of.
Well, that's typical of people who develop like chess or Go, that are not masters of the game.
Yeah.
Now, just a curiosity. What is the technical tool you're using to develop Storyteller?
Well, I'm using right now. I'm using Hax, which is language that is sort of resembles ActionScript, but it's way better as language. It has a very fast compiler that allows me to, you know, to run the game, to not wait so much when I want to run the game. I'm using Flash Develop as the IDE, and I'm generating binaries that are in Flash.
Okay.
So the games are actually, the engine running the games is Flash, but I'm coding in free tools.
Okay.
Are much better than Flash Builder or ActionScript.
So it will be released for which platforms when you wrap it up?
Well, I'm going to release first. I already signed up with Steam, so
okay.
I'm going to launch on PC and Mac first, and then immediately I'm going to work on the port to tablets, probably iPad and some Android things.
Well, it seems ideal for a tablet.
Yeah. And then if the game does well, I might consider other platforms.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, do you have an idea for your next project, or thinking of something?
Well, I have many ideas, the things that I want to do. I mean, this past week I made a game and published it just to take a break from Storyteller. And because, you know, the last time I published a game was 2009 with GAI.
Okay.
That was the last time I published a game, last year. But I wanted to break that. So on the week before the 2013 was over, I made a quick game, an RPG game, published it on Kongregate. And I really like that game. I think it has potential. It's very different from everything I've done so far. You know, so far I've made R games and, you know, Storyteller. It's, you know, these weird projects.
Mm-hmm.
So making a more gamey game thing was actually fun. And I might make it a commercial game. I like the idea. People seem to like it. So I definitely consider, you know, making a commercial game out of it. But seriously, I think that after Storyteller, what I'm going to do is take a whole year to just make small games. Small commercial games, but very small, tiny games. Because, you know, I've been with Storyteller for several years. I don't want to jump into a multi-year project again.
Okay. Okay. I'll link. I've seen that prototype. I'll link it in the notes. So one last thing is, and a question that not everybody likes, but can you tell us about some games, indie games or other kinds of games that you love, that you like, or that you're following?
Well, you know, I've been recently thinking about what I like to play and what I like to make, and I realize that they're very different things. So one of the things I don't like that much about myself is that I'm kind of a junkie when it turns to some kind of games. Like, I would play RPGs, like the trashy RPGs, like I don't know, like Avernum or Geneforge or Abaddon, you know, Jeff Bogle games. Those are very good RPGs, by the way. But you know, one of the strong points of those RPGs is a story and the text, and I don't read any of that. I just keep it over. I just enjoy the trashy part of those games.
Okay.
Because I'm kind of a junkie. I don't play Candy Crush or any of that crap because I know it's dangerous to me.
Okay.
So I stay away from it because my brain goes into you know junkie mode.
Yeah, well, we all do.
So I like several trashy games. I would spend hours, you know, playing games that are just, yeah, I don't know. I played Skyrim for a long time.
Okay.
And there was nothing else for me in that game. I just kept playing because my brain was into it. But, you know, I really enjoy playing those trashy games. But every single time that I tried making a game like that, I failed because I get the feeling that I don't want to spend my time doing this. It's bullshit. But I like playing those, right? So I just made an RPG, so it kind of now is different because I just made an RPG. But yeah, it definitely happens that I like trashy games, and I like creating trashy games, but I don't like making them. So yeah, that's it. I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, I play a lot of indie games. I just realized today I downloaded an extension from Steam that tells you how much money you have spent historically on the platform, and apparently I've spent $1,050.
Well, you should never do that. Okay.
Well, yes, yeah. Well, I mean, what makes me happy about that is that it's 95% indie games.
Okay, great.
So it feels a bit like kind of giving some to the world. Like, it felt like productive money. It was not wasted money, right? So I play a lot of indie games, but I don't have a lot of patience anymore, and so I don't play them very much for a long time. There are some genres that are just not for me anymore, so I don't play the kind of games. I don't know.
Okay. Well, I think this was an exceedingly interesting talk, and we touched a lot of themes, and I will try to link all the many rich references we made, and it was a real pleasure talking with you, and we all really look forward playing Storyteller. It looks really quite great fun, even for junkies.
Okay. So, thank you, Pietro.
Thanks to you. See you soon, then.